I'm joined by Seiichiro Takagi from the Japan Institute of International Affairs. Welcome back, Takagi-sensei. It's a pleasure always to see you and to talk about China and regional security. And at a particular time like now, it's great to have your insights. Welcome back to the Lowy Institute.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy coming to Australia, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
You're known as one of Japan's foremost sinologists, so why don't we get straight to the Middle Kingdom and developments there? Mm. This is a major political year for President Xi. The 19th Party Congress awaits in the fall, if the schedule is as anticipated. Mm. And a lot of people are looking at that and making their own guesses about how that will play out in terms of President Xi's own leadership. Will he cement it? Mm. And what will the external implications of that be? So talk us through, how relevant is it? And do you see China being more cautious into the bargain externally this year? Or is there a chance of a major foreign policy initiative or indeed adventurism on the cards? Mm.
Well, of course, that's a very important question, and I don't claim to have any crystal ball. But as you know, there are a lot of rumors floating around. One of the key issues at the 19th Party Congress and the following first plenum is the recomposition of the central leadership, especially the Standing Committee of Politburo. And if existing informal rule is to be followed, five out of current seven members of the Politburo will be replaced. Who are going to take those positions? Or whether or not this size is maintained? Some people even say that Xi's preference is to totally abolish the Standing Committee. I don't know if that's possible, but a rumor is there. There are a lot of uncertainties surrounding the developments leading up to the next party congress. And in this kind of situation, my sense is that China does not seek serious conflict externally. But that does not necessarily mean that China would take more accommodative approach, because obviously there is a serious power struggle among the top echelon leadership. And in this kind of environment, to be seen as too accommodative or too weak externally is not play well for you. So I think they would guard against a very bold, accommodative steps. But that, at the same time, as I said earlier, they would not want to have their boat rocked too much. So they would be very cautious.
What about President Xi's relationship with the military? He came into power in a very strong position compared to his predecessors in terms of being the chairman of the Central Military Commission. But does that imply that his relationship means he has no worries, or are there other factors? Recently, there have been another round of protests by demobilized soldiers in Beijing, which is a particular sensitivity for President Xi in this current year. So where do you see those fault lines?
As it is well known, Xi managed to implement or start a major reform of the military at the end of 2015. And this reform, which led to the abolishment of four major general departments in the military and creation of separate command for ground forces, and very important changes are taking place in the Chinese military. And as you know, he managed to oust two major former leaders of the military through the anti-corruption campaign. So Xi is pursuing his goal of transforming the military. But I'm afraid that all this strong hand approach is causing a lot of reactions and resistance among some leaders, especially the reorganization of levels just below the top is not going to be too easy, cannot go too smoothly. And I can't draw a direct linkage with the good substantial evidence, but recent soldiers of demobilized soldiers must be related to this uncertainty about military reform.
One potential factor of external instability is the uncertainty now emanating out of Washington under the President Trump's administration. What's your assessment so far of how China has reacted to the Trump administration and its early moves on Taiwan, questioning one China, and now apparently moving back perhaps to a more conventional foreign policy?
Well, just this morning, I got the news that Mr. Yan Jiechi is visiting Washington, D.C. at the first high-level visit after the inauguration of the Trump administration. So I think they are in the process of normalizing the ties, but some top echelon membership in Trump administration are extremely, extremely critical of China, especially in trade and the currency issues. But their criticism does extend to the South China Sea problem. So we have to see how this ongoing Yan's visit would go. But I think what we can expect is a rocky road for both sides.
I'd like to bring Japan into the conversation now. Prime Minister Abe has made his trip to Washington. Secretary of Defense Mattis visited Tokyo, and both of those visits from the outside seemed to go very well, which goes rather against the prediction that there was going to be more friction between Japan and Washington. But of course, there's a trilateral element to that, how that plays out with Japan's relationship with China too. Where do you take the temperature currently between Japan-China relations, and how do you see that moving forward in 2017?
Since the very undiplomatic summit in November 2014, there are signs of improvement of the relationship or success in arresting a downward spiral. But it does not mean that the relationship has fully recovered. Yes, there have been series of summit meeting on the sideline of major international summits. And there are exchanges of economic leaders between the two countries. Chinese tourists are coming back to Japan. But there have been very frictious developments between the two countries. Also, alongside with these positive developments, such as Chinese military vessels passing through the territorial water in Kyushu and flocking Chinese fishing boats around Senkaku in August, supported by intrusion by the government vessels in Senkaku contiguous waters and sometimes territorial waters. So the signs are mixed, and we are not in total conflict, but we are not fully recovered state of affairs either. And in this context, it is very reassuring that United States reaffirmed the alliance relationship, and especially when Prime Minister Abe visited President Trump's villa, the joint statement included the reference to Senkaku as being under the coverage of Article 5 of security treaty between the two countries. So it is quite reassuring. But I must also say that the direction of current American administration still retains a lot of uncertainty. I don't think we can be overjoyed by the accomplishments by the Abe-Trump summit, and we can overplay this hand. And I think the Japanese approach continues to be cautious vis-a-vis China.
It seems that under Prime Minister Abe, Japan has been taking quite an energetic leadership role on various fronts, including in the trade space. Do you think that the uncertainty around the future of U.S. foreign policy in some ways presents an opportunity to Japan?
Well, it will raise the responsibility for countries like Japan, which considers free and liberal international order so critical to its national presence and survival. And so I think Japan is preparing itself to play that role. But this is not the situation in which Japan can be overjoyed or complacent and relaxed. I think heightened responsibility requires heightened effort and better backup systems in all sectors of the society, including think tanks like Jaya.
Since you're in Australia, finally, I'd like to take you to Australia's part in regional security, and particularly the relationship with Japan. Prime Minister Abe was in Sydney not so long ago, where he met Prime Minister Turnbull, and there was a summit and set of outcomes. Mm-hmm. I wonder what your take is on the current state of the relationship, which last year had an obvious hiccup in the form of the submarine decision. Mm-hmm. Is that water under the bridge now as far as Japan is concerned?
Well, of course, last year's event was very disappointing to the Japanese side. But I don't think Japan is dwelling on that. That was a very good learning experience. That was a very precious experience for a country which hadn't done anything like trying to get a contract for major weapons construction. So this experience will be examined and learned for later decisions and later international negotiations. Prime Minister Abe's visit to this country and meeting with Prime Minister Turnbull went very well. And I think both countries sort of reaffirmed their position as the important anchor of stability in the region, especially given the situation in the United States. And I think we should enhance cooperation forward and try to make sure that the United States doesn't stray in the wrong direction too far.
Seiichiro Takagi, Senior Research Advisor with the Japan Institute for International Affairs. It's been a pleasure hosting you today, and I look forward to welcoming you back to Australia on your next visit.
Well, thank you very much.